Well, I want to talk today about Isaiah 55, which is a book in the Bible, and so we're going to talk about it. But I want to start by asking a question. Who here this week has been hungry? Okay, good. Who's been thirsty? Okay, thirsty's good. Okay, you don't have to raise your hands for this one. Who here has wanted to have sex this week? Okay, a couple honest people, that's good. What we're talking about today is desires. We're talking about desires. I have some shocked faces down here, like, I can't believe he said sex. Haven't you guys been talking about sex all spring? Like, this isn't like, Jordan told us you've been talking about sex. If you haven't been, then it's my job, I suppose. What we're talking about today is desires. Because this whole issue of desire is something that, it's kind of complicated as a Christian. It doesn't often make sense, and the world tells you one thing about what to do with desires. The church can often tell you another thing about what to do with desires, and sometimes neither of those is really right. So we want to look at Isaiah 55 to really find out, what do we do with this idea that we have strong desires as people? I asked if any of you have been thirsty, and I kind of have a story. I was on the wrestling team in high school. I think some of you guys wrestle, right? Isn't CJ wrestle? Yeah? There's this weird thing, this like mentality in wrestling of like toughening you up, so they like make you go through pain that's really not necessary, so that you're tougher, which is interesting. But so in practices, we always had this rule that you couldn't take a water break. So you go to like a 3-hour practice, and you weren't allowed to have any water until the end of practice, which is probably really unhealthy and all that stuff. But the kind of idea is that you get really tough and tough, I guess. I don't know. But after 3 hours of working really hard, doing like really hard physical labor in a cafeteria with mats on the floor, you get really thirsty. So I remember these feelings in high school, in wrestling. Like, you guys have ever had cotton mouth? You know what that is? Where like your mouth feels like cotton. Like, it was like cotton mouth extreme. I mean, like, there was just no liquid anywhere, no moisture, and it's just like you're dying for a drink of water, anything. And then finally, at the end of practice, you get to go. And you get to have a drink of water. And it's like this, it's just a water fountain, and it's, you know, crappy cafeteria water or whatever, but it tastes so good. It's so wonderful. So that's kind of, I want to talk about that, because that kind of strong desire is something I know we all feel, and it's actually how Isaiah starts out. Before I read this, I want to say there's kind of two extremes that people usually go to when you talk about desires, whether it's I'm thirsty, I want to eat, I want to drink, I'm hungry, I want something to eat, whether it's I want to have sex, or I want this new thing, or I want something in my life, I want to date this person, I don't want to date this person, whatever it is, there's kind of ways to think about how do you handle your desires. And one way that kind of the world promotes is basically, if you want to do it, right? If you want it, then you should have it. So that's kind of one option. It's kind of gratification. You just basically do it. If it feels good, do it. If that's something you want, if you really want it bad enough, there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to do it. It's interesting. We did this, I think a lot of you guys were there, talk on, that Lauren Winter came and gave a talk here, and we made this video about sex. We went down to downtown Palo Alto and talked to people about sex, kind of introduce this talk. And before we were doing that, we saw some other videos, and this one group had done a video where they went around to people and they said, is there any reason why if two people are consenting adults and they want to have sex together, why they shouldn't? And they interviewed all these people, and everybody said, no. If they're consenting, if they're adults, go for it. And they had young people, they had this great, like, older, like, people in their 70s sitting in a coffee shop, and this lady was like, well, if they want to have sex, they should just have sex. Go for it. It's like, okay. And this is kind of one option. You know, if you really want something, you should just do it. There's nothing standing in your way, right? That's option one. Option two, and a lot of times this is what the church says, a lot of times Christians fall into this option, is basically this idea that you need to kind of squelch your desires. You shouldn't have desires. This is kind of what my wrestling team said. You shouldn't be thirsty. You shouldn't have thirst. Thirst is for weaklings. You know, we are tough wrestling people. We don't thirst. Except we have really bad cotton mouth and race to the water fountain at the end of practice. And a lot of times the church says, you know, we're holy, we're spiritual, we don't want to have sex, or we don't want to go to parties, or we don't want to drink, or we don't want to, you know, date people, or we don't want to do anything because we're Christian and spiritual and we don't have these desires because only, you know, non-Christians have those desires because that's bad, right? And I don't think that's really right. We have some desire going on here. I don't think that that way of handling our desires is right. It's actually not biblical at all. The Bible doesn't talk about squelching or suppressing or denying or taking away desires. The Bible actually talks about fulfillment of desires. Now, that fulfillment comes in a very different way than the world talks about fulfillment. But nonetheless, that's something that a lot of times in church we don't get. A lot of times we don't hear how our desires are given to us by God and what they say about ourselves and what they say about God. But that's what I want to suggest to us this morning, is that our desires actually tell us something about who God is. And they tell us something about how He's made us, and they tell us something about what's going on in this world that He's created. So let me read Isaiah 55. I'm going to read verses 1 to 5. Don't be thrown off by this first word. Ho! Everyone who thirsts, come to the waters. And you who have no money, come buy and eat. Come buy wine and milk without money and without cost. Why do you spend money for what is not bread, and your wages for what does not satisfy? Listen carefully to me, and eat what is good, and delight yourself in abundance. Incline your ear and come to me. Listen that you may live, and I will make an everlasting covenant with you, according to the faithful mercies shown to David. Behold, I have made him a witness to the peoples, a leader and a commander for the peoples. Behold, you will call a nation you do not know, and a nation which knows you not will run to you because of the Lord your God, even the Holy One of Israel, for he has glorified you. So this passage starts off by this call. God is calling a group of people, but the people he's calling are the people who have desires. He says, look, every one of you who's thirsty, that's who I want. That's who I want to come to me. This book, Isaiah, was written a long time ago, and it's roughly divided into two sections. The first 40 chapters are written to the nation of Israel, before they were captured. Now, I'm going to get this wrong. I thought I should have looked this up so I could sound smart among the high schoolers. But it's either the Assyrians or the Babylonian incidents. It's the other one on the other side. But anyway, before they were captured by the bad guys, the first 40 chapters were written to them, basically saying, bad things are about to happen. The bad guys are about to come. Starting at chapter 40, and for the rest of the book, that's written hundreds of years later, after the Israelites have already been taken into captivity. They're already living in somebody else's land, and it's written to address those people. It's written to say, now that you're in exile, now that you're captive, you're slaves to somebody else, now I'm going to give you comfort. So the first part's kind of a warning, but the second part of the book is comfort. And this comes kind of in the peak of God offering comfort to his people. So these are people that this is addressed to. These are people who are thirsty. They've been slaves. They're living in a foreign land. Other people tell them what to do. So they have desires. They want freedom. They want to be their own people. They want to be back where they belong. So this kind of idea of thirsting, it makes sense to them. And he says this really interesting thing, that God actually meets our desires. This is what he says. He says, if you're thirsty, come to me and I will give you drink. And I will give it to you without cost. You won't have to pay for it. You won't have to do anything for it. So it's this really crazy idea that God meets our desires without us having to do something for it. And I think a lot of the mess that we can tend to get ourselves in is when we say, I have this desire, and it's my job to make sure it gets fulfilled. I got to look out for myself. I got to make sure that I get what I want. And that's what can get us into trouble with our desires, by having this idea that we are responsible for getting it ourselves. But God says that He is. And He says this is one of my favorite verses. Why do you spend money for what is not bread? I don't know if you guys can relate to this, but I know I can relate to this a lot in my life. This idea that you're doing all this stuff, you're spending so much time and energy and effort and trying to get something that you realize it's just not really what you want. It's not really what you need. And you get it and you think, why did I work so hard at this? Whatever it is, maybe it's somebody you want to date and you work hard to date them and then you date them and this isn't actually all that great. Or maybe for me, I know it's a lot of, I like little gadgets. You know, I'm kind of a gadget person. So I like wait and I wait for the newest gadget. Like I check online, when's the new whatever going to come out? Right now I'm on like phones. I want the newest Trio to come out. So I'm like waiting and then I get it and I'm like, this kind of sucks, you know? So I don't know if you guys relate to this, but this idea that you kind of spend your money on things that they're not bread. It's not really what you want out of life. And yet, you spend all this time, you spend all this energy, all this emotional energy. Sometimes you spend money, and it's just not really what satisfies you. And what God's saying to His people here is that He provides us what's good. He gives us bread. He says, listen to me, eat what is good. And I love this last phrase. It's translated here, delight yourself in abundance. But it's literally, delight your soul in fatness. Like, eat up the richness of life. You know, let your soul get fat, right? That's this great picture of just kind of all the good things you could want, you know? I actually have taught this passage before, and I use this example of this restaurant in Dallas. I don't know if they have them out here. It's called the Churrascaria. Anybody ever been to one of these places? It's a Brazilian meatery, okay? That's what they call it. It's just meat and lots of it. And the way it works is you pay like one price to walk in the door and that's, you know, you're good. And they give you a little disc that you set on your table. It's got a green circle on one side and a red circle on the other. And if you turn it to green, there's like people walking around with slabs of meat. And if your disc is green, they stop and they say, would you like some lamb? Or would you like some veal? Or would you like some chicken? Or would you like some beef? And there's like 13 different cuts of meat. And if you have a green disc, they just slice it on your plate until you tell them to stop. So that's kind of this, like, I really like meat a lot. So for me, like, delighting my soul in fatness. This is the picture, right? A Brazilian meatery where they just, like, keep coming. And I have this desire of, like, it's pretty expensive. It's like 25, 30 bucks to sit down. But I thought, what if I just, like, bring a book, you know, get there at noon and like spend the day there, right? Like read and just eat meat and more meat and I get full, but then I read a couple hours and eat some more. So maybe one day I'll try and do that. But that to me is what delighting my soul in fatness is like. And the cool thing is that that's what God says He's doing for His people, that that's what He wants for them. He doesn't want them to suppress their desires. He doesn't want them to say, no, I don't feel these things. But He also doesn't want them to say, this is what I feel. This is what I want, and I'm going to take it because I want it. There's something in the middle. There's something about turning to God. There's something about bringing our desires to Him, and that's what He wants for us. So He goes on. I've got about, 10 minutes left? Is that right? Yeah, okay, good. He goes on, and He talks about two different things, two different aspects where He provides what we want out of our desires. The first, He says, incline your ear, come to me, listen to me that you may live. I'll make an everlasting covenant with you. Now, I've been to seminary and stuff, so I'm supposed to be smart, so I need to teach you some Hebrew, all right? Does that sound good? All right, so this word everlasting covenant is berit olam. All right, can we say that? Berit olam. Oh, come on, sound like a Jew, come on. Berit olam. All right, there we go, okay. So this is everlasting covenant. This is what God promises His people. The berit olam. I don't sound very Jewish probably, but forgive me. And these are big words for Jewish ears. This is like, sometimes there are words that just saying them communicates this whole history of stuff. It's like if I were to stand up here and say these words, we the people. Those are like three pretty simple words, right? You probably use them pretty much every day. But when I say them that way, they kind of invoke this whole history of our country and the glory of kind of our independence and who we are as America. These three little words, we the people, communicate this whole history. And that's what Berit Olam would be for Jews. Berit Olam was the covenant that God promised to his people, the eternal covenant, the relationship that he called them in. And this is the idea. Here's the idea. One of our main desires is just for relationship. One of the main things we want is for people to like us, for friends, for girlfriends or boyfriends or spouses or whatever. We just want to be around people who want to be around us, right? Reading a book recently, and he was talking about how, like, why you like people, not like romantically, but why you kind of are attracted to people as friends. And he suggested that for me, like, most of the reasons why I like people are because they like me. You know, it's like if somebody thinks that I'm cool, then I'm going to think they're cool. And that kind of resonated with me because that's kind of a lot of times how it works for me, is that I want to be around people who want to be around me. It's this kind of mutual thing. And I think it just points to this idea that we want relationship. We want to be with people. We want to be with people that know us and understand us, that know what's going on in our lives, that know the hard things. We want to be with people that know the worst things about us, the things that we've never told anybody. I think we have this dream that could there be somebody who could know those things and yet they still want to be with me? This is what God's saying, an eternal covenant, a relationship that cannot be broken no matter what happens, no matter what we do. It's crazy, but God says, this relationship that you want, it's what I offer you, and it's with me. And I know that that can sound really weird. Even as I was preparing for this talk, I just found myself thinking, you know, it's really hard to relate to God. It's really hard to turn to him. What he says is, incline your ear, come to me, listen to me, that you may live. It's all this relational talk, all this stuff about being with God. And, you know, I know for me, I grew up in the church and I heard that kind of all along. And sometimes it just sounds like it goes over your head. It's like, what does it really mean to relate to God? That just sounds so weird. And what I really want is for people to like me. I want to be around people. This God thing, it just can be really hard to believe. And it is. And it will be. Because we live in a world where there are two versions of what's true. And it's easy to forget. It's easy to forget that God is real. And it's hard kind of in our lives to actually believe in God, actually turn to him, actually listen to this God, this crazy thing that we claim to believe in. But that's what it means to be a Christian. And that's why we come places like this, to remind each other, because to say, yeah, I know it's crazy, but I believe in God. I talked to God last night. He made me feel better. You know, that's what this group is for. That's what church is for. That's what our Christian friends are for, to remind us, to encourage us, even when it's hard. And I know for me, I kind of have this history, this pattern of like following people. Like I always want to be around people and I always pick people that I want to be around. A lot of times it's picking kind of mentors that I want to be like and kind of, I want to be like this person, and then I grow a little older and realize, oh, they're not that great. So I pick someone else. I want to be like that person, and I get a little older and realize, well, they're kind of cool, but they're not that great. So I pick someone else, and kind of this history of like looking to people and picking people that I want to be like and want to kind of get this from. But ultimately, God just says, look, it's me. It's me. It's me. Incline your ear to me. Turn to me. Come to me. So that's what I try and do. And it's hard. It's hard to turn to God. That's a tricky thing. But that's not all that God says. There's one other thing that God says that he provides. He talks about David. He goes back to David because David is kind of he's like the coolest guy for a Jew, right? David is what everybody wanted to be. He was the king. He was completely loved by God. He reigned at kind of the best time in the history of the Jewish nation. David was the example that you always went back to. David was kind of just, David was it. So it goes back to David and he says, this covenant, this relationship that I'm going to have with you, it's just like the one I had with David. That's how great I think you are, that I'm going to treat you like I treated David. And if you know David's story at all, he treated David really well. And David didn't always treat God all that well. David was a jerk. David slept around. David was a really bad father. David's son raped his daughter, and he kind of said, I'd rather not deal with that one. Turned his back. Another son killed another son, and he said, let's not deal with that one either. I mean, David was not this kind of picture-perfect model of an evangelical Christian that we think of, right? If David was in a youth group, he'd be kicked out, like, no question. If he was in our churches, we'd think he was terrible. We'd have people, like, praying for him all the time. And yet God says, the love I showed to David, that's the love I'm going to show to you. And not only that, this is what he says about David. Behold, I have made him a witness to the peoples, a leader and a commander for the peoples. He takes this guy that isn't all that much. He's not all that obedient. He's not really a great follower of God. And he makes him the greatest king that ever was. He makes him a leader and a commander. And then he says, that's what I'm going to do for you. He turns. In verse 5, he's talking about David. In verse 4 and verse 5, he says, behold, you will call a nation you do not know. This is what David did. David did this. But what God's saying is, now it's you. You're going to call a nation. You're going to be king on some level. You're going to rule. You're going to do something. I'm going to use you. And so I think this other real thing that we want out of life is we want our lives to be important. We sang the song just a few minutes ago about it. It pleases you. And we say, I come to you even if I never make a difference, even if nothing happens, even if nothing I do amounts to anything. But God says that when we do come to him, he's going to do something out of it. There's this sense, I think, in which we all just want to be somebody. We all want to make some difference. We all want to kind of make a mark on the world and have people remember us or make a difference. And God says, I'm going to give that to you. Now, it's probably not going to look like what you want it to look like. It's probably not going to be exactly what you want. But I think that walking with God means that he's going to use us. He's going to use us in his kingdom. We're going to be a part of what he's doing in the world. And what he's doing in the world is amazing. It's worth being a part of. This is what God says. I know this is true, that we all kind of want to make our mark on the world, is because I have kids. And when my oldest daughter's name is Eliana, and she's 5 now, but she was 2. Amy knows Eliana. A couple of you actually do. But, I realized real quickly that, like, my 2-year-old knew that on some level she was born to be a king, okay? Like, I could tell that was innate within her, because the way she acted immediately was clear that she knew that on some level she was supposed to be in charge, right? I mean, she's 2 years old, and I love how she'd do this. I would tell her something, and I'd say, to pick an example, like, grass is green because of this. And she'd say, no, it isn't, Daddy. And I'd say, well, yes, it is. And she'd say, no, grass is green because something else. And I'd say, Where are you getting this information? You're 2 years old. Everything you know, I taught you. Where are you getting some information that I don't know about, right? As to why grass is really green or whatever it is. And yet, she'd say, no, this is what's true. You know, she knows. And I think that's just kind of because we all kind of know that we're supposed to be in charge of something. We're supposed to have importance. We're supposed to be relevant. We're supposed to do something with our lives, to be a king, to call people that don't know us. We're supposed to have people that don't know us run to us. And yet, when you're 2, your kind of world to exert that influence is pretty small. So you kind of have these ways of making your world bigger. But I think it speaks of what's true of our hearts, of what we were really made to be. And God says, that's what I'm going to do for you. This desire you have to be somebody, I'm going to make you somebody. It may not be who you want to be. It may not be exactly what you look like, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to make you somebody. So this is kind of where we live. We have these desires. We have these things, and I think they really tell us how God made us. God made us to want to be with people. He made us for relationship. He made us to want to be important, to have relevance. And I know as I've thought about kind of the different things I want, whether it's wanting friends or wanting certain people to like me or wanting to get into a certain school or wanting to get a certain job or wanting to date somebody or not wanting to date somebody, a lot of times it revolves around these two things. It revolves around wanting some type of relationship with people or wanting some type of importance, some type of relevance, wanting for my life to mean something. And so what God says is, you don't have to deny those desires. That's really what I did. I grew up in the church, and I was kind of the good kid. You know, like I was always at church. When I was really little, we went to the small church, and the youth group was like me, my brother and sister, and like maybe one other person that kind of floated in and out, you know? So we were always at church, we were always good, and I kind of grew up always doing the right thing. But the thing that I did that I realized now was really dangerous is I just denied that I felt anything. I was such a good Christian, I didn't even want to have sex. I was such a good Christian, I didn't even want to drink. I was such a good Christian, I didn't want to do any of the things that we're not supposed to do. I was such a good Christian that all I wanted to do was go to church. You know, that was kind of what I did to myself. But the truth is that it wasn't true. Truth is that I have desires, that I want things. And denying that, hiding that, that's not what God calls us to. It's not what the Christian life is about. The Christian life is about saying, this is what I want, and coming to God, seeing what he does with it. Sometimes he calls us to just wait. And that's the hardest thing. See, if you're the world and you want something, you just take it, right? You just get it because you want it, so you're going to get it. If you live on this side and you're a Christian and you want something, but you can't have it, you say, well, that's okay because I really don't want it. So you kind of suppress your desire. So either way, you don't have to live with desire. Either you suppress it or you just get it. The Christian life is about saying, this is what I want, and I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait to see how God gives it to me. And that is really hard. Desire is uncomfortable. But God says, wait, I'll give you water. I'll delight your soul in fatness. I'll make you a king. People you don't know, they'll run to you. They'll obey your every word. I'll meet those desires. Just wait on me. Wait on me. Let me pray for us. God, thank you that you love us and that you want for us to want things and people, and that you made us with desires. You made us with feelings, and you don't want us to just turn them off. You don't want us to just deny them, to act like we're too spiritual for them. You want us to embrace them, but to trust you. And that's just complicated. It's hard, but it's possible. It's something you call us to, and something we can do with each other's support. And as we turn to you, I pray that you would strengthen us to do that. Pray for this community of people, that they'd be a community that supports each other in feeling their desires and yet waiting on you. And we thank you for this time this morning, just to look into your word and to know how you created us and how much you love us. We pray all this in the name of Jesus. Amen.